The Coaches Network, bringing the game together.
I feel I've always done my best and always been at my best.
Hey guys, you're now listening to the Coaches Network podcast, a podcast aimed at anyone who's passionate about athlete, talent, and personal development. My name's Coach Yas, and I'm a UEFA A-licensed football coach developer, and content creator. I'll be sitting down with a range of guests to discuss their journeys, their life lessons, and how you can make an impact. Enjoy. Right, guys, welcome back to the Coaches Network. My name is Coach Yas, and I've got a very special guest with me today. Former ex-professional, currently youth development phase lead coach at Peterborough United, Ryan Semple. Good evening, Ryan. How are you doing, mate?
I'm very well, thank you. Thanks for inviting me on, Yas. I hope you're well too. I'm looking forward to the next hour or so, having a good chat about football, all things football, player Brilliant. Development.
Brilliant. Ryan, not going to waste any time. We'll get straight into it. Obviously, an ex-professional. I want to take you back to the start of your playing journey before we move on to your coaching. You mind just taking us back to that point, please?
Yes. So I was a young lad via many different areas, sort of in terms of I was born in Belfast, then no real connection, no family connection to Belfast, but my parents were over there. My dad got a job out there. Spent a bit of time, a very short time in London, southeast London, Lewisham, where my mum was born and raised. And then we ended up, my dad's side of the family were all in Peterborough. So ended up there. And from as young as I can remember, we were lucky where the estate we grew up on, we had a big island, a big field in the middle, and many hours, like millions of kids playing, where it was only meal times and bedtimes that I wasn't out there playing football with my friends or on my own or whatever. And fortunate at the age of seven or eight, I got the holiday camps that Peterborough United used to run, like the community holiday camps in the holidays, and got spotted from there as someone with a bit of potential and signed for Peterborough as a 9 year old. And was there then till I was 21. So I went through all the age groups, got offered a scholarship, a 3 year scholarship at the time, and turned then pro before that 3 years was out, turned pro early when I was 17, and made my debut as a 17 year old at Peterborough, and felt like things were going well. Picked up a couple of nasty injuries along the way there, and ended up at 21 leaving, going to Lincoln, and didn't work out for me at all at Lincoln. Didn't really see eye to eye with the manager, didn't play, had a few niggly injuries, just one thing led to another, and ended up sort of falling out of the professional game. And it was at that point that I started coaching, playing part-time in both, and did that for 6 years before getting an offer of full-time coaching, and decided to not playing on the head at 28 29, I think I was nearly 29. And yeah, 7 years later, as a full-time in a full-time role, I've been coaching, but as I say, for been coaching from the very beginning for 12 years now, so starting to get a little bit of experience, I'd say.
So what was it that, about coaching that kind of took your interest in that respect?
Yeah. Do you know what? It's really interesting. And I say this quite a lot sometimes in all different walks of life. Sometimes you don't realize why things happen or how things happen until you look back and you can connect. You can never connect the dots on the way forwards. It's only when all the dots are there that you can connect them and look back. And I never really, I'll be honest, when I started coaching, if you'd have asked me 12 months previous to that, when I was still a full-time professional, that I would then go into coaching, I would have sort of not said you're mad, but I wouldn't have said that would have happened. It wasn't really anything I'd thought about that much. But it's only when I look back and I had different friends, whether it was family friends or just local. Obviously, I'm from Peterborough, and I was fortunate enough to play for Peterborough United. So in the area, played for the professional club, the area that I'm from. And people would, that with that comes a little bit of a profile, but people would ask me to maybe go and watch their local team, or if it was a family friend, someone that I knew, they would say, oh, can you come and watch my lad play, or would you maybe give him some tips and stuff like that. And I was always really really enjoyed doing that and would always say yes and always help out. And I can even remember a family friend of mine, I must have only been maybe 15, 16, and he was maybe 10 or 11. And his mum coming round and asking whether I could help him with certain things. And we'd go at the park and I'd work on maybe his first touch or a long passing, things like that, crossing, finishing. But I never really connected the dots of, oh, I actually really enjoy coaching. I just loved football and wanted to help out. So when I look back, I think, well, actually, I was probably already, well, I was already starting to be a coach at that age, a young age, when all my aspirations were was to make it as a professional footballer. And that was all I was really focused on. But when you look back and think, oh, actually, yeah, well, I did. I was coaching age without really thinking about what I was actually doing. What happened was when I started coaching, when I'd made the actual conscious decision to do it, I started a summer camp. It was a summer holiday. It was August time. And I'd started playing part-time, and I was like, well, what am I going to do? What am I going to do with my time? Because I'm not training every day, or I'm not a full-time, I'm not training with the team every day, although I was looking after myself physically. But also, let's be honest, I was 23 at that point. What am I going to do financially? Because I've gone from a full-time footballer on a full-time wage to a part-time footballer on, definitely less than half the money that I was earning as a full-time player. And neither was a lot of money, by the way, not at all. I was obviously in League Two with Lincoln at the time. So I started a summer camp. I got some flyers printed and stuck them on car windscreens, and would go into like local corner shops and say, look, can I stick this in your window? And we had probably, we didn't get a lot of people. I had a young lad who I knew, again, a family friend who wanted to help out. And we probably got about 15 people, 15 kids. And we did 2 weeks, 9 till 3. I had no coaching experience. I'd done my level two as a coach, as a scholar, as a youth team player at Peterborough, but I had no coaching experience. And I just sort of jumped in at the deep end and really enjoyed it. It was really hard. And then I had a friend of mine who I went to school with. His dad was a head teacher at school, and said, look, can you come in and do some after school sessions, which I did and I loved. And very quickly after that, I got approached by Peterborough United. Obviously, I'd been there as a player, and the academy manager at the time, a guy called Dave Robertson, he was a coach in the academy when I was a player, and he'd heard what I was doing and asked me to get involved. And yeah, I was there for the first time around. I was there for 9 years doing different roles. So that was sort of how it all started, really.
Right. So obviously you touched on there about the start of your journey, and I guess subconsciously starting your coaching journey without even realizing.
Yeah.
So I guess, you know, I want you to take a bit of time to maybe go back to that point there. What would a session look like for that family friend?
So I relied a lot on, and I'll be honest, even at that point, even after that, and when I first started coaching, as in consciously coaching, and for minimum the first year or so, I would say, I relied a lot on what I liked or what I had seen. So when I watched, I was involved in sessions, I loved football, Yaz, and I still do. So when we trained, or whether I looked at other players, if we did maybe position specific work or whatever, I would look at, well, what do they do to work on this particular aspect? So for example, if it was someone doing working on their first touch, well, what do they do, and what sessions the coaches that I worked with put on, or what sessions did I enjoy if I was working on my first touch, or if I was working on crossing, or if I was working on 1v1 attacking, or obviously is on the flip of that 1v1 defending, whatever it was, I used to just go on what I enjoyed myself, because I felt, and I still feel, while there's parts of the game that people will enjoy more than others, and often it's the things that we're good at that people probably enjoy a little bit more, but I think you've got to enjoy if I'm planning a session and what I would enjoy doing that, I think that's a really good indicator to say, well, hopefully, not always right and not always the case, but hopefully the players will enjoy it as well. So yeah, so I would work sometimes if it was with a family friend, or if I was asked to go and help out with a young grassroots team, I would just think, well, they want to have loads of touches on the ball. It's got to be quite free flowing, and quite intense and sharp, and yeah, just trying to make it as relevant but as fun as and enjoyable as possible, which I think certainly with younger players, that's so important, because I think you learn the best when you're tuned in, and you're tuned in the best when you're enjoying, or you're feeling that you're getting value out of the practice that's being put on for you.
100%. You know, I just want to kind of take you back. Obviously, that was in the initial stages, you know, almost. Why I asked that question, because there's a lot of coaches who, when they first get into it, obviously your situation is a bit more subconscious, but when they first get into it, they rely on quite often what they've maybe been through as players.
Yeah, definitely.
What they've essentially observed in their own experience, rather than, I guess, at the initial stages, maybe taking a more conscious effort to actually decide and depict on what's best for the players in that environment. So I guess, you know, kind of fast forward a little bit. Obviously, that was right at the start when you was maybe supporting a family friend, but then, you know, you, around the age of 23, I think you mentioned you started yourself a summer camp.
Yeah.
Now, how did that look? Because obviously, by that point, you know, you've now, I guess, made a conscious effort to go into coaching.
Yeah.
Were your thoughts and ideas maybe shaped differently as a result of that?
Yeah, it was crazy. I can still remember, let's say it was 12 years ago now, so not that long. And I can remember what I did was, so leading it, obviously I'd organised it. I'd taken bookings. So I knew that it was going to go ahead. I knew I couldn't back out now. And I remember that probably the couple of weeks lead up to it, certainly the week lead up, I thought the realisation of, well, right, what am I actually going to do? I'm offering this service and I'm saying it's going to be sort of 5-6 hours or whatever it was, 9 till 3. And what am I actually going to do? So I put together a plan, obviously, as you would do, a session plan and a sort of schedule for the day and what have you. And what I tried to do is, again, just what we were just speaking about then, it was a summer camp and I had no idea of the abilities of these kids. And actually what happened was the kids were all different abilities. And I tried to make it as fun as possible, but also I wanted to teach them something. It wasn't a case of this is just going to be babysitter's club. Of course, for the parents, having young kids myself now that my eldest goes to a summer camp. It's the first time actually this summer, these summer holidays just gone, that he went to a summer camp. Now I appreciate fully that it's cheap childcare, which is great. But at the same time, I wanted the kids to learn something, just as I'd like my kid, when he went, I would expect him to be learning something as well. And so I tried to make, so I would plan, for example, the theme. So a theme each, so we'd do obviously a morning and afternoon, and each morning or an afternoon, I would have a theme on each block. So two sort of themes a day. And I would, so if it was maybe passing, so I would focus on passing. So anything from basic passing in twos or threes and maybe playing around a square or playing around a diamond or playing around a triangle, to then some fun games where you might have some cones, some sort of traffic cones, and you're trying to knock the traffic cones off and you get different points, varying amounts of points for how far the traffic cone was away or if you're using your weak foot. Or we play football golf, which obviously would challenge them in regards to how close they would get to a certain target and how many shots it would take to get there. We have little relay games to work on your dribbling and running with the ball. So I would always try and have a theme of what I was doing, and 100% I took it seriously, because as I say, I wanted it to be fun, but I also am a huge believer, and actually the more structured it is, and the kids are getting something out of it, they're going to enjoy themselves And as a consequence of that, they're going to get better. So that was sort of what I thought. And the actual practices, some I sort of had a bit of a design in my head, but also some I remembered doing myself. And I remember the night before, obviously, the first day, I woke up in a cold sweat almost, and I was like, wow, this is good. I'm actually got to go through this, because as I said, up until that point, I'd coached, as I say, in earlier one-to-ones and things like that, but nothing on this size, and nothing as planned and organized and as conscious. And yeah, I can remember waking up thinking, wow, this is almost sink or swim. People are giving they're putting their trust in me, with not just their children in regards to looking after them first and foremost. That was the big thing for me, but also the kids and the parents as well. They're going to expect something. That a kid's not just going to keep coming or enjoy it if we turn up and all we do is Wembley for 5 hours. It's not going to work. It's not going to cut it. So yeah. And I really enjoyed it, but I can clearly remember the feeling of having that real responsibility of I need to do something. I need to do well. And it's funny, obviously my career has taken it where it's taken it so far, and I've worked at different levels and different size clubs and different abilities, but I've never been I've certainly never been more nervous than that first day when all I was doing was at a local recreational field, taking some kids on a summer camp. But I was extremely nervous the night before and the day of, but once I got going, it was like anything. I felt I enjoyed it, and I felt more confident, and I got better as the weeks and months and obviously years have gone on.
And obviously, you know, you talk there about, you know, getting better as the years and, you know, weeks, months and years have gone on. Really, you know, it was almost putting yourself in the deep end, which, you know, as you put it, it's either sink or swim. And, you know, within that, you could never have probably anticipated the ranging levels of abilities, potentially the ranging levels in terms of the age group of players that you're working with as well. So just within that then, you know, how did that experience there help shape your views going forward on maybe how a session should be delivered and what things to take into consideration? Because it was soon after that you were approached by Peterborough to go back or to get started in the academy.
No, do you know what? I think the biggest thing, and I've obviously listened to your previous podcast, and I think Chris Ramsey spoke about it around being organised, just being organised and being prepared that, you know, you get things come up that you don't foresee, but you have to try and foresee them or at least be in a position where if they do come up, you can react to them quickly and solve the problem. So I'll give you an example that we, during that first week, you'd organize. So I can remember this one clearly, and this happens to this day in not a week goes by every role I've had within football as a coach, where just something as simple as, you're expecting 15 players, sudden two get injured, or maybe two are ill and one just doesn't turn up or is running late, so they're only going to be there for half the session or whatever it is. Being able to adapt quickly, being able to adapt and change and have that plan of, right, this particular session, ideally, we've got X amount of numbers. But if we don't, session, or is the particular part of the session you're thinking about, is it still going to work? Or actually, are you going to have to maybe adapt? What can you adapt it to, dependent on the numbers? If the numbers get smaller, or the numbers maybe get bigger. And as a week goes by where I don't plan for a session and you have less players than you thought. Or so, for example, now, as in my role now, it could be the under 18s have got two players injured and they need two players, or the first team have taken two of their players, so they would like two more players or one more player or whatever it is, yeah. So that you have to be able to adapt and plan, be organised to plan, but also be organised to be able to adapt. If you plan too much and you're too organised and you become too rigid, then the deck of cards can fall down by something changing. And far more often than not, things do change.
Definitely. You know, obviously, you know, you talked there about maybe being overplanned, and I think the danger with that, and obviously, you know, one of my roles is I work in coach education, obviously, with the FA, and I deliver, you know, some of the level ones, level twos, and support some of the B license stuff from time to time as well. And it's one of the constant things I see is when coaches are so dead set on, this is what I've planned, this is what we're going to do, because this is part of my plan, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Rather than adapting to the needs and the progression that's actually taking place within the actual session itself. So, you know, I always say, well, look, you might have had three or four practices planned, or four, five or six, however many practices you've got, but actually it's good to, yeah, have them planned, but don't be set in your mind that that's what's going to happen.
So exactly.
They do need to spend, you know, and don't time constrain everything either. So if they do need 20 minutes on a practice that you've already anticipated they're going to need 10 for, then give them the 20 minutes.
Yeah.
But equally, then probably post-session, maybe reflect and say, okay, well, did you actually plan effectively if you didn't recognize that they may have needed the 20 minutes in the first place?
Exactly.
And you know, and then the plus side is if you've got the additional practices ready and they haven't got round to them, your next session's ready for you already.
Exactly. And that's the thing, it's a process, isn't it? It's not a case of, well, we all have an idea, and every session you have an idea, and it's good to have an idea of, right, where are we going to start this session and how do I envisage the end of the session looking. But it's a process, and that end part of the session might be the start of the next session, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. And you're spot on. It's also it's the organisation of a session that you have to be adaptable for, but also the performance of the players within that session as to whether, do you know what, we're doing a attack v defense, or it might be an unopposed technical drill, whatever it is, but you have an idea of, right, I think we're going to get to this point. But if you don't necessarily feel that you have to move on. You might decide to move on because you think, well, actually, no, that's enough for tonight, and we'll revisit it tomorrow or whenever your next training session is. But don't feel you have to move on because, as you've just said there, Yaz, you've allocated 20 minutes. If they haven't got it in 20 minutes, well, then that's not a problem at all. But just have that plan of, right, okay, they've not got it. We're gonna move on now, but I'm gonna go back to that.
Definitely, and I think there's nothing wrong even going into the next session and actually doing a revisit to the same practices just to see what the recall was like too.
Yeah. Yeah, no, for sure. That's I think checking learning is a massive thing, and whether there's so many ways to do that. If you're fortunate enough to get sessions filmed, it might be a case of, well, you're not necessarily going to go back to it straight away, but you could potentially visit it in the classroom, or with technology these days, if you can get it filmed, then you might have a WhatsApp group and you send it out. Right, lads, girls, whoever you work with, but you're sending it out and saying, look, this is what we did. This is what I think we did well. This is what I think we didn't do so well. We're now going to progress on to XYZ, whatever. But making use of all the different tools and technology you've got to try and embed that learning. It doesn't have to be, well, they're going to get from A to B in 20 minutes. It doesn't work like that. It sometimes it does, but certainly not all the time.
Definitely, yeah. I want to take you back to yourself a little bit now, obviously your coaching journey. So, you know, Peterborough approached you about getting into the academy. Obviously, the academy manager at the time found out what you were doing and was obviously impressed by the sound of it. What did that look like? Because obviously, you know, I think you gone in there initially. I think the last I know, when you left your first role at Peterborough, you was also assistant under 18s coach, was it? Something?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, exactly that. So when I first went back, so I went back in the 2008 when I'd started coaching, a couple of months into my sort of very, very early days coaching career. And I was, so initially what happened was they offered me to assist with, so the academy manager, Dave Robertson, he was a coach at the club when I was a player. But actually, one of my squad coaches he'd left and gone back to the club. Because what happened when I was 18, the club shut the academy, and then about 3 years later, they restarted it, and the coach who I'm talking about, he went back to the club. And because I knew him and he'd been my coach as an under 13, he was actually still taking the 13s. So I went and assisted him for the rest. Well, initially it was for up until Christmas. So I went in like the October and they said till Christmas assist and we'll give you a team in January. And I really enjoyed working under him. A guy called Steve Gerrard, not the Steven Gerrard, but a guy called Steve Gerrard. He was the coach, and I really enjoyed working with him and listening and learning and taking parts of sessions. But a lot of it was around just talking to individuals or talking to the group about my own experiences or just helping in certain ways. But they offered me an age group in the January. And I'll be honest, I didn't feel ready to take the team on my own. So I said to them, I said, look, I'd prefer, and this was all voluntary. This was all voluntary as an assistant. The league coaches got paid, but the assistants were voluntary at the time. And they offered me, I can't remember which age group they offered me now. But anyway, I decided that I wanted to stay as an assistant, because I just didn't feel ready to take the team on my own. As I say, I'd only been coaching not even 6 months at that point. And I knew, again, talking about the responsibility and how much the expectation I place on myself to be able to deliver whatever it is and teach, I didn't feel ready to do it. I didn't feel that I would do myself justice. So I stayed assisting for the rest of that season. And then the following season, or towards the end of that season, I took over the under 10s, which would then, I followed that into the next season, the under 11s. And I stayed with the under 11 age group. So I stayed, I obviously had a new group. So I did full season, then I did the second season, and I did three seasons with the under 11s. Then I moved up to the under 14s. I spent 2 years doing the 14s. And those players were actually at that point then the same players that I'd worked with at under 11s. And then it was at that point, so I'd been coaching then at the club for about 5 years. Yeah, around 5 years. As I say, I was doing more and more sessions, because what I'd started to do is I'd was lucky to be able, because my job was obviously coaching in schools, and I was still playing semi-professionally, which was obviously all evenings and weekends on a Saturday. I was offered the chance to coach, come in and coach on the day release program. Mm-hmm. So I would come in and work with the older players. So although I was still like the 11s league coach and then the 14s league coach, I'd also work with the 15s and 16s as well, which was great for me, because obviously I was getting to work with different age groups and I was just out on the grass as much as possible coaching. And I was obviously coaching in schools in my own business, but also then working with obviously in the elite environment within academy football. So that, as I say, for 6 years, 5 or 6 years, I did that, which again is something, and I understand it, Yaz, but I think sometimes we can, all of us can be, but I listen to coaches and I obviously read a lot on Twitter and people who I speak to. And again, I'm fortunate that people will ask me questions and maybe see me as be interested in my story and what I've done. And very keen to climb up that ladder, get into full-time coaching with an academy very quickly and then climb up the ages and what have you. And I'm so glad that I had the years I had coaching in different environments, coaching in schools, coaching in as I say, within the academy, but also different age groups within that. because, as I said, we spoke about earlier, the adaptability and being able to be flexible and also the grounding it gave me to be able to relate, forget what you're teaching them, but just relate on a communication level, on a human level, with different players of different ages, of different abilities, of different genders, some with disability. I used to work as part of my role when my coaching business, I used to go into a special needs school and we just deliver a couple of hours, again, different age groups, and some were physically had quite severe disabilities, and some was behavioural. But all these different things, if I'd have just got a full-time role at a club straight away, I wouldn't have experienced these things. And if I'd have been chasing that, I might have been blinded to the opportunities that came my way. So I was absolutely grateful, and I'm glad when I look back now, for while it was difficult because I had to juggle all sorts of things and manage my time and what have you, and it was busy. It was before I had kids, but I was with my girlfriend at the time, my now wife, and I was out every night or every day apart from a Friday where I coached in the daytime, but I didn't. I had a Friday night off, but I would coach on a Monday and a Wednesday. I would train myself as I was playing part-time on a Tuesday and Thursday. I would have my game on a Saturday that I would play in, and I would have obviously the kids' game on a Sunday. So I was really busy. I learned so much. I learned so much for myself, but I also learned so much by learning and watching and listening to others. So yeah, that was the journey at Peterborough. As I say, that was the part-time journey, and then got offered the role that I'm doing now, that I've gone back into, but in a lot smaller. That the club was, the academy was a lot smaller then. So I was doing a lot of stuff within the role itself. I was leading the under 16s, but I was also the youth development phase coach, which meant that obviously that I had the 13s had a group, a lead coach and assistant, the 14s did, but I was the 15s and 16s coach. So lots going on.
And just, you know, obviously within that time, you know, you've gone there, I'm just curious to understand maybe how much the club had changed from when you were coming through as a player yourself. And then obviously now as a coach working with those young, you know, aspiring, you know, footballers there.
So when I first went back so in fairness, it would have been 2 years, when I left the first time. So I left at 21 and went back at 23. So just over 2 years, it was about 2.5 years that I'd spent away. But as I say, the academy had actually, when I left, the academy had been shut for 2 years, 2-3 years. And the academy at the time, when I was a young player coming through, Peterborough was a well-known academy. We had... So what happened was before it was Centre of Excellences. It was called a Centre of Excellence. And then what happened probably, I'll get the years wrong here, but around 98, 99. So I would have been maybe 13, 14. It changed to, you had academies and you also had Centre of Excellences. So just like now where you have Cat 1 down to Cat 4, the academy, it was more just two. So you had the academies that were your Cat 1s and 2s, and your Cat 3s and 4s were Centre of Excellences. Now, that isn't a complete, it didn't work exactly straight down, but just for obviously for the sake of this, imagine that. So Peterborough was a Cat 1, 2 academy back then. And classed as an academy when we were coming through. We played against all the top sides in our region, all the obviously top London clubs, the top Midlands clubs, and then when basically what happened was, as with Cat 1s and Cat 2s now, the FA and the Premier League basically said, you need to be funding more, you need to be spending more money if you want to continue to have academy status. Otherwise, you'll be put into a centre of excellence. So the club, being a League One and League Two club, couldn't afford to do it. So what happened was, when I became 17, 18, we went into Centre of Excellence. And then when I got to like 18, 19, they scrapped it completely. So when I came back in 2 years later, the academy had started back up through Dave, but it was on such a smaller level, in regards to facility. We didn't have our own training facility. We used to sort of train. We trained around about 30, 35 minutes away from Peterborough. Our training was in one venue. Our games were in somewhere else. The games used to have to always be staggered because you couldn't get more than, say, one team playing at any one time. It was completely different to what I was used to as an academy player at Peterborough when I then returned as an academy coach at Peterborough. Completely different. But in fairness, over the years, I was there almost 9 years the first time round. Things did change a lot. We got a sort of a base and a training ground and... we got more coaches and more staff and a little bit more funding and stuff like that. And it just progressed from there. But while those things were the case, it didn't mean that we couldn't still work and improve really good young players. And there's been a number of players that have gone on from Peterborough and gone on to better things, gone and had careers, or players that might not have even made it at Peterborough but have had whether it's non-league careers or have left and then gone up and got back through the leagues after leaving Peterborough. So it had changed a lot. It had changed a lot, but there was still some fantastic work being done.
Mm. And obviously, a large part of the role was supporting those players, you know, in preparation for first team football, potentially, if they were able to secure that.
Yeah.
What would you say some of the key behaviours and characteristics that you observe, both from your experience as a coach and potentially even as a player, that really stood out for you as almost non-negotiable and must-haves in order to kind of make it over that line?
Yeah. The three biggest ones for me, in no particular order, but you've got to have belief. You have to have a real, real belief that you can do it. Now, that can come in loads of different ways. That can come in someone who is ultra confident and exudes confidence, whether that's in training or in games. But that can also, a real belief can come in, which links into the next one, in being really resilient. I think if you've got to be resilient to have a career in football. But I think the more belief and confidence you have that you're capable of achieving something, the more resilient you'll be, because you'll get a knockback, but you'll attack it head on and you'll get back up again, because you'll have that belief of, no, I'm going to go and achieve whatever it is you want to achieve. So belief and resilience are certainly two. The third one I say is you've got to have a real, real work ethic, to work hard and work at your game and work not just when the coach or anybody else is looking. You've got to work when people aren't looking. You've got to work on, not just, as I said it earlier, you've got to work on your strength. If you're a wide player and you're not great at, you're a good crosser of the ball. Now, of course, you've got to keep working on being a good crosser of the ball. Or if you're a forward or you're a defender and you're really good 1v1, you've still got to continue to work on that. But also you've got to have a real willingness to work on your areas of your game that you need to improve as well. And that requires hard work, because it's not easy. Nobody enjoys not being good at something. But if that's something you need to improve to get to the next level or help you achieve what you want to achieve, then you've got to work on it. So that work ethic to be able to do resilience and have the belief of that you can achieve. I think they're the three big things for me.
Brilliant. And, you know, just to kind of take it, you know, a little bit deeper then, what would you say are some of the integral things for you becoming a pro?
What, as to the reasons why I felt that?
Yeah, I mean, so if you're looking back at your own journey and coming through as a young pro, what would you say some of the standout things were for you personally that, you know, you felt, okay, these were key moments or key things that you kind of think back to?
I think I was never, and listen, it's get it right. I was a professional footballer, and I achieved that goal. Certainly, I played played numerous games, but I didn't achieve what I wanted to achieve, or I certainly didn't achieve as much as other people. But what I did have, obviously, I made it as a professional. So.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
No one can take that away, and me and my family are very proud of that. But I think the biggest thing for me, I never felt like I was the best player, but I always had belief in myself that I could achieve what I wanted to achieve. And it was probably I was asked to do a talk the other day, just on self-belief. For a friend of mine who's doing some work with some kids who have been within their school, have been sort of targeted as academically good achievers, but could do better. So talking about belief, basically. And I got to about 13 when I realised, you know what, I've actually got a chance of maybe doing this, 13, 14. And from that point, I was just very, very, very focused on trying to do everything I could to be the best I can be. I've been fortunate that I've had good role models, whether it's family members or friends or family friends even, that have not necessarily sat me down and said, you must work hard, or you must do this. Just the example they set, I looked at and saw that they were successful, and thought, well, these guys work hard. These guys, they're not just happy, well, they're good at something and that's it. They work hard to achieve what they want to achieve. And this isn't just in football. This is just in life. And I think I've always been very aware of, to achieve anything, you've got to work at it. And I think that's where I've been fortunate. I've had role models that showed me that, not necessarily, as I say, not necessarily tell me that you have to do it, but I was able to maybe work that out for myself. And I take that with me every day now, that whatever you want to achieve, you have to work hard and also work smart. So it's not just about how many hours you put in, it's what the quality of those hours, you know. And yeah, I would put it down to that, being aware of what I was good at and working hard, but also being aware of what I was maybe not good at and what I needed to improve, and working even harder at that as well.
Brilliant. You know, and just on, you know, just kind of delve into that a little bit deeper. And obviously you talked there about maybe not, you know, overcoming that challenger and, you know, reaching that goal of becoming professional footballer, maybe not kind of extending it to the career that you would have hoped or initially for. So, you know, as with anyone, professional footballers, coaches, or in any walk of life, you know, people do suffer setbacks. You know, you talked there about some of the experiences previously around some of the clubs. You know, you were going through some injury issues and selection issues, and maybe issues with some of the staff at the club. Just want you to kind of maybe reflect back on your playing journey, and obviously then we'll move back to your coaching shortly, but in that time as a player, what was maybe one of, if you could reflect back, what was one of the most notable things a coach did to kind of support you?
Yeah, just spend time with me. That's the big one. That's what I when I look now and I think back and listen, I think the structure, the support structure for young players on and off the pitch, but I'm going to talk in a minute. I'm going to talk for now on the pitch. I think it is a lot better, because I think people do have more staff around, and even in the last 10 years, the support for young players is greater, and it's as great as it's ever been. And I'm talking around now what the EPPP has brought in. And I know some people would think that maybe it's not all good, in regards to the ECCC and what the requirements now demand of clubs and academies. But one thing it has done, it has meant that the support for young players, whether it's staffing, whether it's contact time, whether it's facility, whatever it is far greater. But I look at me and I left Peterborough at 21 and I was still a very young player. And even before I left Peterborough, I got in and around the first team at 17, 18. On many levels, it was great that it was a men's environment and I had to grow up and deal with that. And there were some fantastic characters at the club, some fantastic characters that helped me a lot. But I think when I look back and I reflect now as a coach, I was still a young lad and it wasn't just me. There was a number of players. As I said, the academy was successful. So there was a number of players in and around, say, a year older and a year younger than me. There was numerous players that were in and around sort of the reserves and stuff like that. But it was very, you're almost left to your own devices a little bit. Well, there was no under 23s. The reserves back then was young players that were sort of in and around but not playing regularly, but also then older pros that were either coming back from injury or also not playing. And that on so many levels was great. And you hear so many clubs and so many coaches talking about that now, that that's what's maybe missing from the under 23 league. But I get that, which is obviously why with the Football League Trophy, why the Cat 1 clubs are, many teams are obviously under 21 sides in that to try and get more competitive men's football. I get that totally. And I agree with that. But one thing that has happened with the introduction more of under 23s and players being within that setup longer is that it allows players to be properly coached still as what they are, young players, rather than just throwing them into men's football. And some people can thrive in that early, some people can't. And I think that's probably the biggest thing that I found quite difficult when I left Peterborough, even at 21, it was almost like, right, I'm with it now. Whereas when I was at Peterborough still, I had coaches around that still knew me as a young player and helped me in that way, if that makes sense.
Yeah, sort of developing that personal connection with you and knowing you as a person. I guess, as with anyone, really, I think if you know someone, you almost know better how to, or you're in a better place, shall we say, to maybe support them because you know maybe the tendencies and the intricacies of their character and personality. Yeah. So, you know, just kind of
100%.
Build on that then. You talked there about that connection and just curious to know whether throughout your journey, you know, we'll talk more about the coaching aspect in a little while, but certainly as a player, would you say that you've had any particular individual that's been a major influence for you and has been almost like a mentor maybe? And if so, what's the biggest lesson you kind of took from them?
Yeah, so John Morlin, who is the Brighton Academy manager, so he was, it's funny, so he came to Peterborough as a young, what happened was he had been a young player that didn't get a professional contract, or he might not have even got a youth team contract, but what happened, the coach brought him across from where he was, and he became a coach, just a young coach of academy players, similar to myself. He'd stopped playing or professionally and started coaching, and I was in his first group as an under 10, and I had him at 10s, 11s, 12s. Then he went off to the older age groups as I was working my way up, and then he was then my youth team manager at under 18s. He then, as I got into the first team squad, he was first team coach, and then he went off and he left Peterborough. And this is what I'm talking about in regards to, so he left and I was still maybe 19, 20. And that kind of figure who would still work with me daily, and not that the other coaches wouldn't, but he would be very proactive of, look, Ryan, this is what we're going to work on after training, or you need to work on this. Here's some ideas for you to work on this. And I would then go and do it because I was obviously so eager to improve. When he left, that sort of went. And And I probably, looking, self-reflecting, didn't do enough to either seek that out, someone like that again, or didn't do enough to maybe continue having him as that mentor, although I although he wasn't around, because he's someone who I still speak to very regularly now, and as he went off to Ireland and did some great work with the Irish FA, and he's now been at Brighton a number of years as the academy director at Brighton, so he's now sort of that mentor as a coach as well, which is incredible to have someone like that to be able to talk to and learn off. So he's the biggest one for me. And you question the second part of what did he teach me? If there's one biggest thing, I think it was probably around making sure you can look yourself at the end of the day, the end of a season, or if you have a successful or an unsuccessful time, but just done everything you could. And as I say, probably when he moved on, and I then moved on probably about 18 months later when I went to Lincoln, and things, it was tough there. I didn't start particularly well there. I had an injury there, and then I didn't play, and I felt at the time that the manager it was a situation there where two guys, it was a very, very young manager who had done some really good stuff in the academy, who got given the job. And there was another guy was brought in as a director of football to sort of help him, who was an experienced guy. And I felt I was stuck between the two of them, that one really sort of wanted to help me and look and try and push me. And one probably wasn't too fussed either way, just the way it was. I always feel now when I look back at that time, I probably, when I wasn't in favour, I worked hard still and I did what I could and what have you, but I didn't push myself as much as I should have done. Not necessarily to be successful there, but having been there, I was there for 18 months. When I left, I wasn't anywhere near the levels that I could have been if I'd have worked even harder, because I wasn't playing games regularly. So I'd fallen behind. And when I left there, that was when I went on trial to a couple of clubs and I did okay, but not as good as I would have liked. And that was when I decided to get into coaching. And I feel that was my toughest period as a player. And I should have worked harder to get through that better.
Mm. You sort of, just delving a bit deeper into your coaching journey. I'm not going to kind of, we've talked a lot about your time initially at Peterborough, and obviously touching a bit on about what you're doing now. But there's a couple roles in between those two periods. Just want to take you to obviously your role at the FA. Just talk a bit about that and how that came along and what that entailed exactly.
Yeah, fantastic role. So I was lucky. Obviously, I applied and interviewed for the role, and it was BAME coach mentee, which was a full-time role for the 12 months. And basically what that entailed was there was four of us, two male, two female. And it was around 6 weeks. It was around 6 weeks each, 6 to 8 weeks, six placements over the course of the 12 months within the FA. So I spent 6 weeks with the FA YCDs, FA Youth Coach Developers, that support coaches on their A license, B license, AYA, in the elite game. So they're coaches of academy clubs, and they obviously support either on course or also back in the clubs. So I did that. I also did the role of the county coach developer, which was a very, very similar role, but just in more grassroots. I worked within the PE unit. So those guys go into schools and not just schools, but work with community departments of clubs in regards to how they deliver and things that they deliver on their program. I also spent, I worked with on two camps with the 16s, under 16s and 18s, and the national camps as sort of as a technical coach, and the role within the camps varied. So I did some position specific work. We did some analysis work pre-camp in regards to the opposition we were going to play, and delivered some bits around that. So that was obviously an unbelievable experience, and that was an experience, my first experience of working with, obviously, there's the academy football, but then there's obviously the elite of academy football as well, working with obviously some of the best players of their age in the country and Europe as well, which was amazing, fantastic experience. So yeah, that was the 12 months, and the idea of it was to either within the FA or back within your club, within a club environment, club setting, to get a role within the professional game, and not just get a role, but be better for the 12-month experience and be better equipped for whatever role you go into.
Definitely. And obviously off the back of that, you've now found your way at Manchester City.
Yeah, so I had 2 years, yeah. So towards the end of that time, obviously we started applying for roles, and within the 12 months as well, I didn't explain this. So while you had the six to eight week placements, six of them, there was also some things that ran through the 12 months throughout. So we would always, at the end of every placement, we would get together, the four of us, and we would present on what we've done. And obviously as part of that, you're developing your presentation skills, your communication skills. We had workshops in terms of regards to CV writing, interview techniques, things like that. So I was busy to a close the last 2-3 months. I was busy obviously applying for roles, and was fortunate to get a few interviews and interviewed for the role at City, and obviously got offered the role as a 15s coach, which was fantastic. So I spent 2 years, or a season, just over a season and a half, before obviously COVID struck, up there, which was amazing. Learned a lot of things and learned from a lot of top people, and again working with some top players, and yeah, that was a fantastic experience, and one that I felt I am now better for, and fully equipped into obviously my role now back at Peterborough as the YDP league coach. It was an opportunity to come back to Peterborough and really have a real input on driving the program, and yeah, it was a perfect timing professionally, but also personally, to come back to my hometown and get going with the work that we've got to do here, you know.
Brilliant. And obviously, you know, there's massive culture shift and changes probably between the two environments. What were the major things you took away from being at Man City in those couple of years, and you know, I guess being around, you know, what might be a group of highly more experienced coaches?
Yeah, and you're right to a point in regards to that point you've just made. There are some excellent coaches there, but there's also some young, and by the way, still excellent, but some young, inexperienced coaches that haven't been coaching that long at the club. Mm-hmm. And then on the flip of that, at Peterborough, you've got some really experienced coaches that have been around a long time and done a lot, and also some that are exactly the same, are developing and absolutely committed to progressing and learning themselves. But I think, and it's a question that obviously I've been back at Peterborough 3 or 4 weeks, so not a long time, but I've been asked it plenty already. Probably not a day's gone by that I haven't been asked it. What's the difference? And what I would probably say is the biggest, and it's a positive, because it's something that can 100% be transferred and will be, it's the expectation of and the standards of what you as a player, but also what you as a coach, and what you as an academy or a club or whatever, the standards that you place on yourselves as coaches, as staff, but also of players. and money and facilities and resources, that doesn't alter your standards or your expectation that you can place on yourself and also the players you work with. You don't need world-class facilities to develop players. You don't. What you need is top coaching. You need you need good people. You need good rapport with the players. But you need, as I say, you need to develop a player and a person holistically. And that's not all about facilities or all about staff, number of staff. It's great to have a lot of staff, but it's not great. It's only great if you have the right staff and the right mix of people and the right people in the right roles. So I had a great time and learned a hell of a lot at Man City. And there's a lot of stuff that isn't transferable. But for me, the important things I totally believe are. And there's a lot of really great work going on at Peterborough already that I've seen. And the job is to try and build on that and get even better.
Definitely. And you're going to just kind of build on that then, you know, talking about the range of experienced individuals in both environments. Mm-hmm. And obviously, throughout your experience, you know, we're coaching the last 12 years now?
Yeah, 12 years, yeah.
Yeah, within the academy game. You've probably seen a whole host of coaches and a whole host of positive, I guess, work being undertaken within different environments.
Yeah.
What would be one of your biggest pet hates or bugbears if it was at all when it comes to coaching?
I think when it comes to coaching particularly, I think it's probably around, well, two things really. One, the fact of what I said earlier about it's not just going to get from A to B. You have an idea, right? This player is going to develop at this rate and he's going to get to this place. Now, you have the two points. You have where you start and where you end. But to predict, and anyone who thinks they can predict what the middle bit's going to be, for me, is lying. Yeah, I think what you do is, and certainly the more experienced you get, you can have more of an idea for sure, because you might have seen similarities in a previous player, whether that's from a technical, tactical level or a physical level, but also from a psychological or personality level. Definitely you see players, like I see players and I have scenarios now and the way I have a gauge of where I think they'll be or where I think they'll which route they may go, because I've seen it before. However, I'm not there's no way I'm gonna completely say this is gonna happen, because I'd be stupid if that's what I thought, because it doesn't happen like that. And also the rate at which this person is going to develop, or the journey, you hear it all the time, there's so many bumps in the road and there's so many different potential factors as to whether a player is successful or not successful. So any coach, if you like, that says, well, this player, if someone gets written off, for example, at the age of 13. Now, I know there are some players that you look at and go, look, it's very unlikely they're going to be able to achieve a certain level. And on the flip of that, you might get a player at 13 and go, do you know what? They're going to be successful. They're going to make it. And some do, but very often some don't. We often hear about the players of, at 12 years of age or younger than that, when they've gone on to make it, I always knew he would make it. But how many times did that person who said that also say that about another player that didn't? You don't know, because you never hear about it. So that's a little bugbear of mine. But probably alongside that, and a bigger one is people who are in a rush to climb the ladder, or whether it's go from academy, or go from part-time academy to full-time, or to go from under 13s to under 16. There's no need to rush, because every moment in whatever role you are in, you're going to be learning. There's opportunities to learn, there's opportunities to develop, there's opportunities to learn your craft and get better. And you're only ever going to be getting better if you're focusing on what you're doing. Yes, have an end goal. I certainly have an end goal, of course, but not an end goal, but I have things that I want to achieve in the future for sure. But you have to fully focus on what you are doing to get better, to then help you get to the next step. Just as the same with a player. It's exactly the same as the journey for a coach. Focus on what you're doing and do that to the best of your ability. You'll get to where you want to get to eventually. So they're probably the two biggest things that I would, I'm not saying it's a bugbear of mine, but I would advise young or aspiring coaches to just be mindful of.
Definitely. And you touched there on obviously having some clear goals for yourself. Obviously, you know, be aware that, you know, your journey may go in a direction you might not have anticipated, but if you've got some things to kind of work towards, and that, you know, that's a start. You know, just to kind of build on that, then, you know, that's, I guess, you know, in some ways, a bit of advice for people to kind of just take on board and think about. But, you know, if you had an opportunity to maybe turn back time and talk to yourself getting into coaching, age 23, setting up that summer camp, and, you know, knowing what you know now, a few years down the line, what would be one message you'd want to give yourself starting out that journey?
That's a million-dollar question, isn't it? It's a great question. And I know you're going to ask me, but it's a tough one. The biggest thing I think I would say is to just, as I say, be yourself. Be yourself, and while you're going to learn from others, which I have done, and while you're going to grow. So certain things that you do and believe, or I did and believed at 23 in regards to coaching, have altered slightly. I feel I've always done my best and always been at my best when I'm being myself and being, because ultimately that's all you can be. And if you're not, I think this is on so many different levels. Yeah. So from working with players, when I've maybe veered away from or behaved in a certain way that I felt I should have behaved, that then players find you out, because players know, and not just players, people know when someone's being authentic or not. And I think, as I say, when I've been myself and I've showed my personality and my character and put my spin on things, then I've been, no question for me, one, I've enjoyed it the most, and two, I've probably been the most effective in regards to whether it's delivering a session or talking to a group of players or even talking to an individual. So that would probably be the biggest thing, to be myself and to not necessarily definitely listen and learn and take on board and grow in that way, which I feel I have done. But also, your trust your gut and as I say, be yourself, version of whatever it is you're trying to do, but make sure it's your version of it, not somebody else's.
Definitely. It's almost, you know, be the best version of yourself rather than a cheap imitation of someone else.
Exactly right. Nobody can be anybody but themselves, and no one, there's only one version of me, and there's also one version of somebody else. So you can learn 100%, you can learn off good and bad, but ultimately it's still got to be, it's got to look and feel like you.
Definitely. I'm going to take you back to something you said a couple of minutes ago, having that goal and having something kind of work towards. You know, as we start to wind down, you know, where do you, or although you don't necessarily have an end goal, where do you see yourself in 5 years from now? Then, what do you hope for?
It's interesting because a couple of years ago, obviously, I had the opportunity to go and work for Manchester City, and I loved it. And one of the big reasons was I wanted to work with top young players, and I had the opportunity to do that. And I also wanted to work in the best environment. Now, it varies. That I think that is very, very subjective. What's the best environment for you? So for me, I talk about it again. I want to work continue to work in a fantastic environment, but also be a driver of that environment. I would like in 5 years, I would certainly, whether it's going to be 5 years or not, or less or more, I don't know. But I definitely want to have a crack, and if given the opportunity, have a crack within a first team environment. How that looks, I don't know, whether that's management or as a coach, or you never know what opportunities are going to come up, do you? But I definitely feel like I would like the opportunity to work in a first team environment. I feel that I'm 35 now, so I'd like to think I've got a few more years left. But I certainly feel that if I didn't at least have a go at it, I may look back and go, oh, I wish I had. So that's a goal of mine. And I want to work at the highest level. So whether that would in first team environment in the Prem, if it's a first team environment, then I want to work in the Premier League. But that, as I say, 5 years from now, who knows whether it might be 10 years, it might be 15 years. It might not happen, but for me, I always want to work. I want to work in the best environment, but I want to maximize my own potential. And I believe I have the potential to work at the highest level. And what I would also say is, though, whatever level I do end up at or where I'm working now, you can, I believe in maximizing yourself every day. So for me, if I'm maximizing myself, then I am working at the highest level. The highest level of the version of me is the highest level for me. So no, I don't want to sound wishy-washy at all, because of course I do want to work. I want to work at the highest level, and I feel that I would definitely want to work in a first team environment in some capacity. Yeah. I don't know how that looks, but I feel like I've got many, many more years ahead of me, many more things to learn. And on that note,
you know, you talk there about still being relatively young and having many more years. When you do eventually get to that back end of your career, maybe time to kind of call it a day, what would you want your legacy to be?
You know, legacy is one of those things where it's interesting, because I look at what I would like people to say about me as a coach is someone that gave their all for every player that he worked with. So to help them, I speak about maximizing my own potential, but one of my drivers, one of the things why I do the job I do and why I'm very passionate about it, is because I firmly believe in trying to help young people, not just young people, but obviously in the way it is at the minute, the environment I work in, it is young people, but helping young people maximize themselves as well. So what I would like is for people to say, any player that I've worked with or anybody I've come across that I've tried to help, is that they could say, yeah, he tried his absolute best to maximize, help me to maximize my potential. So yeah, from that point of view, that would be the big thing. That it's not a case of leaving a legacy that I necessarily create X amount of, or help to create X amount of professional footballers or X amount of players that go on to play in the Premier League or the Champions League or international honours. The big thing for me is that anybody that I would, let's flip it on its head, I would hate and I would feel quite disappointed if people looked back over my career, or I look back on my career, and there was a lot of players that, a lot of people that thought, well, I don't think he gave his all for me. That would be my biggest bugbear. So flipping it again, what my biggest thing, legacy, if you want to call it, people look and talk about me in a way of, yeah, he gave everything for me. He gave everything. He did everything he could to try and help me. And that might be helping someone who hasn't quite made the grade, but trying to help them in a new club or continue to develop themselves. Or it might be someone, there's players that I've worked with. So the first players I were working with now are in approaching mid-20s. So they could. There's people that I still speak to from when I first started coaching.
Yeah.
And many of them aren't in football now, but I'd like to think that when I see them, they can ask me things not just about football, but about life.
Personal life as well.
Yeah, exactly right. And that's something that I think,
certainly for me, I've even got a few players like that myself. That, you know, I've coached years back. You know, I would almost say that we're almost friends now.
Yeah, 100%.
You know, just kind of build on that then, right? You know, you've talked there about wanting to have that impact on a player. You know, and I think that's something all coaches should aspire to have as an ambition at the back end of their journeys, I believe anyway. You know, and just to kind of build on that, if you had 60 seconds now to kind of leave the listeners with one golden nugget to take forward and apply in their journeys potentially, what would that be?
So, for me, make sure you're committed. So you've got, first and foremost, to be committed. This is my opinion. You might disagree and listeners might disagree. You've got to love what you do. You've got to love it. I'm fortunate that I'm privileged that I'm in a job, first and foremost, in an industry that I love. I love football. I always have, as long as I remember. And I'll be honest, while at times it's waned a little bit when I was having my struggles as a player, but I've always loved the game and I feel I always will. So I'm fortunate. So you've got to find something you love. And if you find something you love, there is absolutely no excuse to not work your maximum to achieve whatever it is within that industry you want to achieve. So obviously we're talking about football. So if you want to be a coach, there's no excuse for you not working to learn your craft, whether that's going and watching sessions, whether that's volunteering to deliver sessions, whether that's hopefully being in a position where you have someone who you might be able to go and, as I say, go and watch and go and pick their brains and go and listen and go and learn from, look at yourself and what you do and reflect on decisions you make or coaching sessions you deliver. Just have a passion, find that passion. And if your passion, obviously we're a football podcast and coaches, if your passion is coaching and that's your love, there is no excuse to not throw absolutely everything at it. And even if it is a voluntary basis for a number of years, as I say, I don't know a coach that hasn't done that, that hasn't worked their way up in some capacity. So go just spend the hours, but spend quality hours working hard and just honing your skills and just making sure whatever you do, you try it, you at least attempt it to be your best. It won't always go well, but at least you're going into it knowing that you've done all you can.
Definitely. And just on a final note, Ryan, you know, if any of our listeners did want to get in touch or to kind of, you know, ask further questions regarding today's conversation or just anything really, is there any more so they can get in touch with you?
Yeah, so you've got my Twitter is at Ryan Semps. So very easy to remember. That's probably the best way. I'm on that all the time. Anyone wants to get in touch, I've got a number of coaches on there. I'm one of these people. I'm not massively. I look at it a lot. I'm not massively vocal on it. I'm only on things that obviously I feel are relevant to me. I'm not just going to comment on stuff for the sake of it. But what one thing I am, anyone who messages me in regards to something, any kind of advice, I'm certainly more than happy to talk on that level, because I think it's important. As I say, I go back to it in terms of what I want to achieve and why I get up in the mornings to try and help others maximize themselves. That's players, but that goes for coaches or anyone as well. That's my that's my driver professionally for sure. So no, I'm more than happy to chat.
Fantastic. And look, Ryan, I want to just start off by saying it's been a very insightful conversation, certainly for me, and I'm sure it will for our listeners. So I want to thank you again for your time this evening.
Absolute pleasure. Absolute pleasure. And I've enjoyed it. It took a while to get us on the same page, hasn't it? But in regards to scheduling the chat, but it's been fantastic. And anyone who's listening to this, I hope you enjoy, and all the very, very best. I mean that sincerely.
Well, there you have it, guys. Another episode of the Coaches Network podcast, where our aim is to bring the world of athlete, talent and personal development together to just one platform. And you can help us with that mission right now by sharing this episode or any of your favorite episodes with everyone that you can think of. You can tag us in those mentions as well on Instagram at The Coaches Network or on Twitter at The Coaches Net. We look forward to hearing from you. Let us know what you thought about today's episode. And until next time, guys, take care.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.